Peaking too soon and mid-training cycle burnout. No one wants to get burnt out 10 to 4 weeks before their goal race, but you would be amazed at how often this happens in the running world. People often start training for their goal races about 20 to 16 weeks out, sometimes even more, because when you sign up for events like the New York City Marathon, the Chicago Marathon, and even the Boston Marathon, you know that you are enrolled and in this event upwards of 10 months before the event. And so it can be really tempting when you get that notification, when you get that email from the Chicago Marathon saying, hey, you made it into our major marathon, especially if it's your first marathon or you feel like you're really far away from the shape that you want to be in to do that event. You might get really excited and start thinking, I need to start training now. And while, yes, it is important to have that strong base and to start that training, the first couple of weeks of training, especially when it is a base building situation, they really should feel pretty sustainable and pretty easy. However, most people do not start out at that sustainable, easy pace. They often pick a training plan that they feel like would really give them a big sense of challenge right away, and they want to feel like they're doing something new. They want to feel like they're doing something big. They want to feel like they're doing something different. And so they pick something that is maybe 2 to 3 steps ahead of what they maybe should be doing. And it's really fun and it's super exciting to feel extra challenged at first. But then 5, 10, maybe 15 weeks into that training plan, the quote-unquote fun and the novelty slowly starts to wear off. It's not something where you wake up one day and you're just like, I can't do this anymore. It's just kind of like this slow build, this dread that starts to build week after week where you're like, gosh, it just feels like lead. Your legs start to feel like lead. You start to question if you can sustain this for a couple more months. It just becomes really challenging. And I think this is a place where sometimes athletes will think, oh, I'm mentally weak, or oh, like I peaked too soon, I'm not made for this event, and you start to get inside your head mentally. But really what has been going on has been manifesting physically for several weeks before you get to this mental place where, man, I just feel like I can't do this anymore. So many people report that they peak too soon for a race. I hear this oftentimes in the running community. It's kind of like a phrase I think runners created on their own where they say, oh, I peaked too soon. But really what ended up happening is that they felt really good the first few weeks, maybe first few months of training, and then it slowly fizzled out. So don't let this happen to you. We're gonna talk about what the factors are that could be the things that are holding you back. Could be the things that are burning you out, both physically and mentally, during your training cycle. And we're going to talk about ways that you can avoid this, because we want to make sure that everyone has this opportunity to approach a race, to peak at the right time, and to have your race day be the time where your fitness is at 100%, where you are at your peak potential, and then have your recovery after that. Because no one wants to peak for their race 3 months before their race. No one wants to have the peak 2 months before their race. You want to peak at your race. You want to have your best performance at your race, not at the 5K 4 months before your race, right? So the factors that we're going to be talking about during this podcast episode are, how much mileage should you be running? And what type of training plan should you pick based on that mileage? Number 2, should you be increasing your mileage and your long run durations or your workout intensity every single week? We'll talk about how you can find a plan that has the appropriate increases. Because oftentimes when you're Googling these things, you just pick a plan. If you don't look at this rule that we're going to talk about in this podcast, you could be setting yourself up for failure. And I know just from quick Google searches, there are a lot of plans out there that do not follow this principle. So stay tuned for that. Then the third thing we're going to be talking about, is fueling really that important, right? I mean, there's a lot of conflicting things out there on the internet. You might hear people say, oh, fasted cardio is the way to go. You might hear people say, I feel really good on my training runs and I don't even fuel. Or you might hear people talk about quote unquote carbohydrates being bad. Are these bro sciences? Is that correct? Or is fueling actually extremely important? We're gonna talk a little bit about that. Then The fourth thing we're going to be talking about is managing your overall life stress. This is something a lot of people are not talking about, right? So your life stress, what does that mean? How much are you lifting right now? Are you trying to burn the candle at both ends? Are you going to CrossFit 4 days a week? Are you going to Orange Theory? Are you going to jujitsu? Are you doing all of these other activities on top of also trying to be in peak marathon shape? That's a lot of stress on the body. We need to prioritize the stress that's most important to you, right? When it comes to what we're choosing. On top of that, we also want to be talking about other things that are maybe inhibiting your recovery. So drinking, right? Are we drinking a lot? Are we sleeping enough? Are we in a season in our life where it makes sense that we would ask for our body to PR over a long distance event? So for some seasons, any moms that are listening right now or moms-to-be, if you have a newborn and you're not really sleeping and you're nursing, that could be a challenging season for you to ask your body to be in peak shape. So there's just a lot of factors involved there. Same with work. There's just so many factors. So we'll talk about that. Then the last thing we're going to be talking about is how should you be feeling at the start of training, at week 8? How should you feel throughout the training cycle? How do you know if you're doing it right versus falling into some of these traps? And then what should you do if all of a sudden you feel like, uh-oh, I think I'm falling into that trap that they were talking about on the podcast where they said, oh, shoot, I think I might be headed towards that burnout. I think I might be headed. What can you do to mitigate that loss? What can you do right then when you're 8 weeks out to make sure you don't hit a complete wall and totally break down, right? So what can you do in that week or 2 week period to reboot the system?
Yeah, so that's a good overview. And I think that one goes hand in hand with number one. So we'll start with that. How much mileage should you be running? And this is one I get all the time when people start their official marathon training, I guess. A lot of people like to have like a date in mind just so that I think that mentally it helps them know, like, am I doing a 16-week build or 18-week or 20-week build? Or sometimes athletes come to us and they start right at that point, right? They get a coach just at that point. And so they want to know what mileage they should be running. And a lot of times it's a simple answer, right? It's basically starting with what you've been doing. So we'll look at the last 3 to 4 weeks and we'll start you off at that same rate. Maybe the new variable is a workout that we're going to add in, or it could be an extra mile or two on your long run. So that would kind of be the first variable we introduce. But overall, we want to follow a progressive overload approach to building mileage. And so we don't need to jump from, you know, 25 to 34 miles that first week. And I know that's a common thing a lot of the times we'll see is people will not only add a few miles to their longest run, but they'll add in an extra run day on top of that. And so that's where they get an extra, you know, 6 to 8 miles for their weekly mileage, right? Just in 1 week. And so if you're running that lower mileage, it's really important that these increases are very incremental and that there's, you know, some structure behind why you're doing it and how it's going to flow as you progress through the training cycle to prevent the burnout feeling. So that's sort of my thoughts on how much mileage you should be running. And it kind of ties in number two as well. So we'll kind of, these two go hand in hand with how much mileage or how much you should be increasing every single week. And you definitely don't need to be doing that. You know, you could be adding a mile or two here to your long run, but typically we don't need to be adding more than 10% miles, 10% over week after week. And so that's kind of my thoughts about mileage as you're starting out.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people will Google search marathon training plan, for example, and I guess the first one that pops up here on Google, just pulling it up, marathon training plan PDF, I Google searched on images. This first one, over the course of, it looks like about 14 weeks, it only has 3 cutback weeks. So it's asking you basically to build mileage from 20 miles per week to 41 miles per week. I would say that's pretty aggressive. And again, it's really gonna depend on an athlete's background. So an athlete who maybe could thrive off of this could be someone that has experience consistently running in like the 30, 35 miles per week range, who maybe took a little bit of time off and now they're building back and they're at 20 miles per week. However, if you are someone who right now, like your longest run is 7 miles, 8 miles, you've never really gone more than 10, 20 miles a week is about like what you do on a good week, this plan would be extremely aggressive. I would maybe go for something less aggressive. So what are some things to look for? I look for Okay, so how many miles per week? Look, historically, how many miles per week have you been doing in the last 6 to 12 weeks? What's your average? Even if you are coming off of an off season, I still think that's incredibly important because it still paints a picture of like where you're at physically. Where is your body at? Where's your muscular skeletal system at? Just because you, for example, 20 weeks ago or 6 months ago, you were running 50 miles a week, but if in the last 3 months you've only been doing 20, that's a completely different picture. And you still need to start off at that conservative point because we can't just like dive back in. The reason being is because it's going to be additional stress on your muscular skeletal system. So aerobically, yeah, you could probably handle it, but it's your muscular skeletal system. It's been a while since you've been at that mileage, so we need to build it slowly and progressively. Could you get away with doing more increases than, say, someone that's never ran more than 20 miles mm-hmm. per week? Absolutely, but we still need to be smart about it. And I know it can be really tempting to want to ramp up really quickly because your body is going to respond pretty quickly to training. But the problem that we see when people try to bounce back to like what they were doing maybe 6-8 months ago is that an injury can pop up. And that's the last thing we really want to have happen, especially at the beginning of a marathon training cycle. So it's better to be smart about it and allow for a little bit of extra base building in there. So don't really increase your mileage by more than I'd say like 10% per week. And then like you were saying, do you need to increase every week? Definitely not. So one thing I noticed about this marathon training plan that I just pulled up on the internet, the free one that I was talking about, it looks like every time there's one, two, three, there's about 3 weeks of building mileage before one recovery week, which I think is something that is pretty typical. You see that quite a bit. I think even in the RRCA coaching certification, that's what they recommended doing. In my experience as a coach, I feel like there are a lot of people that can handle this, but I also think there are other approaches, and I don't really think that a lot of these, if I look at any of these training plans online, it doesn't look like any of them are doing anything else other than 3 to 4 weeks of build, 1 week cut back, 3-4 weeks build, 1 week cut back. There are other approaches. A different approach you could take is every other week building, or every 2 weeks of building, 1 week cut back. And the reason that you would do it that way is there's a lot of reasons, but I like to do every other week because I don't like to have people building their long run every single week for 3 weeks. I just feel like that's really intense, both physically and mentally. Another reason being is there's, I think it was in Meb's book, he talked about optimizing like a 10-day training cycle instead of that 7-day. Well, most people aren't able to swing doing a long run midweek because if you are doing a 10-day week or 10-day training cycle, what that would have you do is like, okay, let's say you do your long run on a Saturday 1 week. Well, then the next week you're going to be doing it like that Wednesday. And then the next week you'd be doing it on like Friday. I don't know, but it would shift. Your long run day would shift. And most people, they can't swing that. And so the alternative to doing that instead of having a long run every 10 days would be, let's do a long run every 14 days. And within a 2 week period, you could get, I believe, like three workouts and then one long run. And that's pretty good. If you can say, hey, I got three workouts and then a long run. So maybe on the weekend, instead of doing a long run, you're doing a workout. So it might be Tuesday workout, Saturday workout, Tuesday workout, Saturday long run. And you just keep doing stuff like that over the course of your training. And so it's every other week you're having that weekly mileage build, every other week you're having that weekly long run build. So that's one option that works really well. I know it can be really tempting to want to increase a long run every single week because that seems to be what everyone else is doing, you know, that whole pressure by what other people are doing, or maybe what your run club's doing, maybe what it seems like everyone on Instagram's doing. But you have to ask if that's going to be the most optimal thing for you, especially if you're someone that like doesn't really enjoy long runs, or you have a really busy schedule, you're traveling a lot. Maybe you just find that if you have longer than 7 days between long runs, you actually feel better, you're able to execute your workouts better. And over the course of your training cycle, let's say you are doing a longer training cycle, like 20 weeks, that's 10 opportunities to do those really big long runs. And I think that's more than enough where you can get a lot of those long runs done. And I think it's a really good option for people who are taking the route of a longer training cycle. Right. Where if you're someone that's only doing like a 12 week, then yeah, we probably have to do long runs more than that. But if you're starting your training 6 months out, every other week, probably a better approach.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I'll factor that in when I'm figuring out the dates that we have to work with and how many weeks. But, you know, each athlete is different. And I do a lot of the 2 week builds, 1 week off. So I like every other week. I'll use that for like maybe athletes who are maybe newer to marathoning or injury prone, just so that we make sure we're not overdoing it and doing too many long runs. But I think the another common misconception is about like the cutback week and what that should look like. A lot of times people might, like I have some athletes that they don't want to do much less. Like it's really hard to hold them back. So you have to really, you might still give them a workout if they're someone that's like super motivated. They might still have a workout during their cutback week, but their long run might be 10 or 12 instead of like 14 or higher. And some of their easy recovery runs might be like 5 instead of 6, or, you know, just as an example. So that's sort of what a cutback week could look like. For some, it might even look less than that. It might be like a pretty big reduction. It might be zero workouts, just all easy runs. So that will kind of vary from athlete to athlete. And as you get a sense of like how your body's, you know, responding to the training throughout the cycle. But if it's your first marathon cycle, I really like your approach of every other week. I think that's really good. And you can maybe start it a little bit sooner, so that gives you some more time to fit in those long runs.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even if it's your 24th, like yeah. I do every other week for long runs, for any of the marathons that I'm training for, unless it's I have a shortened training cycle for whatever reason. But I think that's a really good point, is that sometimes people really struggle with that concept of a cutback week. I know I personally do. So like, I will usually do 2 weeks of build, 1 week cutting back. And in that time period, maybe like at the end of that first week of building, I'm like, oh man, like I'm really looking forward to that cutback week. I'm feeling the fatigue, like, okay, one more week. And then I get to the end of that second week and I'm like, you know what? I just plowed through and I feel like I could just keep going. So let's just keep building that mileage. Like and you get kind of in this like hardcore attitude where you're like, yeah, you can handle it. Like, and you get really that like tough mindset. And so I think for runners, it's really hard to shut that off. Like where you're in that like super tough grinder mode where you're like, yeah, I can do this. Like, and then all of a sudden we're asking you, okay, well, you got to cut back. And then they're like, well, I don't feel like I have to cut back. And that's the whole point. You want to actually be cutting back before you feel like you need it. Because as soon as you cut back, when you're like in desperation or you're like, oh shoot, something flared up, or like, oh, like I feel like I should cut back this week because I'm totally exhausted. Like you probably waited too long and it's going to take you longer to recover. So we like to go on the side of, if you don't feel like you need to cut back, but you've done 2 to 3 weeks of building, this is the exact time you need to start cutting back. And if you don't feel like you need to, that's exactly where you want to be, right? And if you're feeling like, oh, I'm totally not being challenged at all, well, then that means maybe we should increase a little bit more. Maybe that's some good feedback to share with your coach. But you still have to do cutback weeks regardless. You would just probably want to increase the load a little bit more on those building weeks. So maybe it's a little bit more mileage, maybe it's harder workouts. But we don't just get rid of a cutback week or a rest day because you're not feeling like you need it, right? So these are things that still need to apply. It's kind of like sleeping, right? Like you still need to go to sleep even if you don't feel like you're tired. Or if you woke up at 1 a.m. and you're like, ah, I'm not really tired. It's still like you gotta go back to sleep, right? That it's kind of the same mindset. Like, yeah, you gotta, if you're running high mileage, if you're training for a marathon, you still gotta have those cutback weeks. You can't keep building that long run every week. You can physically, but you shouldn't, because it's really good to have those benefits of the repair mode. And what ends up happening during that cutback week is you get a lot of those repairs that can be done. Your body's able to kind of bounce back from the build weeks. You're able to have a little bit more recovery, restore your glycogen storage, all of those things. And plus you also get that little bit of a mental boost because you are taking some time off from maybe like those super, super long runs, even though it's only 7 days, and it's just a really good thing you can do for your body and your success long term.
Yeah, I liked about how you said the cutback, you know, you should do it before you feel ready or before you feel like you need it. And another sign of like maybe changing your approach could be if you're feeling sort of run down during a specific week, that could be a good sign that you should have taken a cutback week. So adjust things going forward. So if you're on like a 2 week build, then maybe you try that every other week. Or if you were doing a 3 week on, 1 week off, then maybe drop it down to two. So your plan doesn't need to be set in stone throughout the whole course of your marathon training. So you can make those adjustments as needed. I think it's totally normal throughout a marathon training build to have like one off day here and there where you just kind of don't feel good. But as long as you bounce back the next day, I think that's pretty typical. But if you're having multiple runs in a row where you're feeling really tired, all of, you know, just legs feel heavy, then that's a good sign that you should be in a cutback. And so kind of learn from that and make those adjustments as you go.
Definitely. Well, the next point we wanted to talk about is, you know, is fueling really that important? And my stance on it is absolutely yes. I mean, that's why we have two registered dietitians here at Run for PRs. Fueling is one of the most important things you can do to be successful in the sport of distance running. I've definitely learned this mistake the hard way. I'll just kind of share a little bit of story here, just because I think there is a lot of stuff out there on the internet that'll be like, oh yeah, running fasted, using your fat storages, like all that stuff, right? And while yes, the human body can run long distance without using fuel physically, yes it can, we are talking about what is going to optimize your performance, what is going to make you run the fastest that you can, have the best race that you can, etc. So while the human body is capable of doing certain things, we are looking at what's going to be the most optimal for your performance, and that's that. Back in the day, I don't know, probably 10 years ago, I fueled during my first marathon. I didn't run a good first marathon, and I was like, well, the fueling didn't work. Oh, it was the fueling. I don't like fueling. It's dumb. And then I started not really fueling during subsequent marathons, and I even did an ultra with like pretty much minimal fuel. And I will say that it was a lot of crashing and burning. It was a lot of slowing down at the end. And it wasn't until I started implementing fueling where I could finally carry the pace over 26.2 miles that I was wanting to run, right? So I didn't increase my 5K time. I didn't get any faster in shorter distance events at all. I didn't really even change my training for the marathon. The biggest thing I changed was my fueling, which allowed me to maintain the fuel source throughout my run, right? So usually what ends up happening, if you're not fueling, you kind of run out of all that glycogen, and then your body starts relying on your fat storages for fuel. And that's actually going to cause you to slow down quite a bit because your body cannot run at as fast of speeds running off of that fat fuel source. You pretty much have to stay in like zone two, right? And so that's why it's better to be using the carbohydrates while you are running and using the sugar, because your body uses that as fuel before it starts tapping into glycogen, and it's just a more optimal form of fueling. So that's kind of like the Spark Notes version of what the dietitians have said to me, and I just think it's a huge thing you can optimize in any endurance events. And I think oftentimes it's overlooked by people because you can physiologically finish these events that are under, you know, 6 hours without utilizing it, but it's miserable, right? You're probably not going to feel as good as you could. And there's just a lot of, I think, confusion out there in regards to fueling.
Yeah, when I think about fueling as a whole, I'm thinking about it in two different aspects. And one is while you're running, the other one is when you're not running. And I think it's so important when you're not running to be making sure that you're properly, you know, nourished with everything that you need and that you're recovering from these workouts, right? So it's not just about what you eat for breakfast in the morning, but it's about what you put in your body after the run so that you can replenish the storages to have enough energy for the next run and the run after that. And so if you're building your mileage consistently or you rapidly kind of ramp things up, it's really important that you are probably consuming more calories too to account for that. And that's something when we started Nordic skiing in the winter, I didn't realize how much more energy it was requiring. And so I think I kind of got sick because I was maybe overtraining and under fueling. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important, I think, that people have a good grasp on eating more calories and just, you know, there's a lot of calculators out there. You can work with a dietitian to figure out like just how much you should be consuming and how many grams of carbs and protein, all that based on your body weight. But that's really a big one that I think is, I mean, that's because you're not, think about it, you're not running for 95% of your time or of your day. And so the small percentage of time that you are running, then you need to be thinking about the fueling to optimize your performance, like you said. And so anything over an hour, you want to make sure that you're consuming adequate number of carbs and, you know, electrolytes and stuff like that to replenish and to feel good. So I know we've done podcasts on that in the past. So for every person, it's different, but typically about 40 to 60 grams of carbs per hour is a good number to shoot for if you're doing like a marathon or half marathon.
Right, yeah, really good point. I like to take a gel every 30 minutes on runs over 90 minutes. Just not only for the performance enhancing benefit, but also because it helps train the body, okay, this is how I fuel during runs. Because mm-hmm. my biggest excuse for not fueling way back when was, it makes me nauseous, I don't feel good when I'm fueling, all of those things, like the upset stomach. So I can definitely like relate to when people have that that complaint. And even like the Nordic ski race we ended up doing this winter, it was like a 2.5 hour event, and I remember feeling extremely nauseous after. But I think the biggest takeaway there was I was taking the Powerade mixed electrolyte that they were doing, and so a lot of that sugar content, I just think taking a gel every 30 minutes plus getting the Powerade, obviously I knew like, okay, rookie mistake, but I was kind of being lazy, like they were just handing me cups and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna take this sugar. And so there are usually things that you can nail down within that if you work with a registered dietitian as like, okay, what is actually the issue here? Because chances are it might be something like sugar overload, because for that, with the Powerade, when you mix it on site like that, the ratio can get off, and that can be really upsetting to the stomach. And so luckily I didn't feel sick during the race, but it was really after where my stomach was like, whoa, what's going on? So it could be something as simple as that. Like maybe you're going to be carrying your electrolytes, or maybe if you need electrolytes, you're going to do some salt tabs and only take water on the course. So there's a lot of ways that you can utilize different fuel during your run, right? So I think sometimes people will be like, oh, that doesn't work for me, or I tried it once and it didn't work. I think there's a lot of trial and error that people don't really talk about, right? Or like you were saying, fueling throughout the day becomes really important. Like fueling before your run becomes important, fueling after your run. And sometimes people, they don't like to eat before their run because they think it like makes their stomach upset. Well, it's like experiment with things, see what works for you. And Coach Megan, she always said something like, basically her whole day, she's an Olympic trials qualifier in the marathon, but she was like, my whole day pretty much revolved around running. And I know that sounds really like ridiculous, right? But I was like, no, I'm really glad that you said this, because I sometimes feel that way as well. Like I'll be like, well, I have to eat at this time, I'm going to go on my run, and then like, what am I going to eat after? And there's just a lot of logistical things that I think people don't realize that you might need to be thinking about all the time is,
right,
what am I going to eat before? What am I going to eat after? Is that enough to eat for dinner? Okay, I have a long run the next day, so I want to make sure I'm having like a carbohydrate-rich dinner. I want to make sure I eat at the right time, not have too much fiber. There's so many things that kind of go through the thought process involved. And I think if you are training for a marathon, you might actually feel like your whole day revolves around running to a certain extent, right? So it's almost like everything you do is like a domino effect. Like you stay out too late, well, it's going to impact your running. Well, you didn't drink enough water the day before, going to impact your run. You didn't eat enough before, going to impact how you feel. You didn't do this. Oh, okay. It's a domino effect, right?
Yeah, really good things. And just one thing to add about the fueling is, you know, there's specifically when you're running, there's enough of a variety now of products that you should be able to find something that sort of, you know, sits well with you. And so I know for me, when I started doing longer like triathlon stuff, I needed more like food substances. I just couldn't do the gels and the liquids. I needed like actual, like, I don't know, something like a bar to eat while I was on the bike. And so there are a lot of those products out now, and a lot of, you know, the local running stores around here, they have a pretty good selection. And so just trying some new things, you know, there's the chews and the waffle stingers and just types of crackers, things like that. So there are a lot of products in addition to like the gels and the liquid forms, and a lot of them are going to have different you know, concentrations of sodium and carbs and all of that. And so just kind of playing around with what will work for you and trying to do your best to consume those on an hourly basis so that you kind of hit your minimum so that you can optimize your performance is key.
Definitely. The next thing we wanted to talk about was how are you managing your life stress? And I know this might sound a little bit woo-woo, but it kind of goes back to that last point of how Megan was saying, hey, yeah, like everything kind of revolves around running. But really, it's more about considering your overall stress. Like, is this a good time for you to be asking your body to PR in the marathon, right? So you kind of want to like run down the list of major life stressors. And if you are experiencing more than, you know, say one of them at a time, I think let's really think about how aggressive we want to be in terms of this training cycle and maybe even like reconsidering altogether. Like, is this the best thing for you to be doing right now? So like major life stressors, right? So that could be new child coming into the home, it could be a new job, it could be moving into a new house, it could be moving into a new city, it could be having a new commute or something like that, going through a divorce, getting a new pet that requires a lot of time, starting a new side hustle. The list really goes on and on, or death of a family member, right? Like there's a long list of things that anyone would consider, okay, yeah, that's a major life stressor. Some of those things are going to impact you for longer than others. And I think we all just need to really be honest with ourselves about assessing the situation that we're in and asking, is this the best thing for me to be doing right now? For some people, depending on the situation, training for the marathon could be the best thing for them because it helps them kind of get out the door, helps them prioritize themselves, especially in a time where maybe they're feeling like down and out. So maybe death of a loved one, or maybe going through a divorce. Like sometimes it really depends on the situation, right? But I have worked with some people where it actually sparked even more motivation because it gave them something. It gave them like a why to get out the door. It gave them something to focus on for themselves and not dwell maybe so much on the negative things that were going on in their lives. But if you're maybe in a different season where it's like, okay, you just had your first baby and things are maybe just more challenging than you thought and you're just really not enjoying it and you feel like this training cycle is bringing more stress than it is joy, or perhaps you just started a new job and you weren't really expecting to have this career change and the work hours are different and you're having a really hard time like finding an hour plus a day to get your run in and you're not really enjoying it. You'd rather be running like 4 miles a day. Just a lot. There's so many variables and situations, but I think it's okay to allow yourself to reassess. So if you did get into the Chicago Marathon, the Boston Marathon or whatever, a lot of things can happen in the time from registering or getting into that race to actually starting to really train for that race. And I think allowing yourself the grace to make adjustments, make changes if needed, is a really good thing that you can do because running should always be enhancing your life in some way. And you get to a point, if you get to a point with your training where you just feel like it's sucking the life out of you and it's not really bringing anything positive, and if you didn't have this event, you probably would not be really running that much at all and you don't really like it anymore, allow yourself the grace to perhaps change, defer events, those sort of things. Other things to think about, so let's say you decide you're still gonna keep going with it, which is what most people end up doing. You really want to be thinking about your stress when you're considering your long runs, mileage, workouts, all those things. So if you are in a season where let's say you're traveling a lot for work and you're still trying to do this marathon, trying to negate as much stress as possible, right? So maybe that means we're going to be doing long runs twice per month, like 1.5 times per month on average, just because you're traveling so much and we don't want to risk like getting sick or injured, and we want it to still be enjoyable for you. And maybe we're going to be adjusting some of the other parts of training and being a little bit more flexible with the mindset and your goals, I think is really important.
Yeah, all really good points. I really like how you brought that point up about being flexible with maybe your goals, or just being okay with maybe training a bit less during for a specific race during a time where, yeah, your life stressors are a bit higher. Another thing too is I know a lot of people are very committed to their goals and they love running. And if you're going to go all in on something, like let's say you're trying to qualify for Boston or whatever it is, when you're increasing the stress of your of your running through long runs and mileage and workouts, we often need to ask ourselves, what can we do to maybe lower stress in other areas of our life? So what's maybe something that is added stress right now that we could get taken off of our plate? So maybe it's, I don't know, house projects or whatever it is. Maybe it's asking your spouse for help in this area. But whatever it is, you know, having that support around you, I think, is really key and crucial in how you frame up, you know, your overall day. When you look at your day and everything that's going to go into it, you know, we just talked about how much of your day you have to spend time planning on your nutrition and your meals and all of that. And so that's added stress too, that is going to affect your running. And we talked about the under recovery aspect. That's something, if you're not having that time to get enough sleep and to get enough just time to, you know, meditate or just be present with your thoughts and just relax and lower your heart rate, you know, that those things can affect training as well and your under recovery. So it's really important that when you think about stress as a whole, you know, you sort of prioritize all this and compartmentalize your stress as a whole in different parts of your life. So
right. No, that's a really good point, is even if you can get like all the training in, if you are sacrificing at the table of like, okay, well, I'm just going to eat, you know, garbage, or I'm going to skip meals or whatever,
right.
Or I'm going to sleep 5 hours a night. Those are not like really good choices. And I think it would be more optimal to find something where it can be like more balanced, right? So we got to get at least 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night, and all of those good things, right? So the next section, we're going to be talking about how should you feel during the start of training, how should you feel in the middle of training, how should you feel at the end of training. So at the beginning of training, so I would say pretty much anywhere until you are 8 weeks out from the race, 9 weeks out from the race, it shouldn't really feel that challenging. I mean, it should feel like a... should feel like you're doing something, but you should never at the end of the week, at the end of a run, be like, I just can't do that anymore. I physically, there's just no way. There shouldn't be a lot of like those thoughts going on. It should feel pretty steady. It should feel like if the coach increased your mileage a teeny bit, you'd be able to sustain it. But we don't want it to be so much where you're feeling like, okay, like, I don't know how I'm gonna, you know, keep going. And I think that's the biggest thing that people don't talk about, is that base building time and even the first couple of weeks of training, it's not super challenging, and you don't want it to be, because you want to reach that point of being 8-9 weeks out from the race where you're able to go into the peak of training and have time, have energy to increase the load to a peak training and not be completely destroyed from it. So you want to reach that point and still feel pretty energized and pretty good. Because if you reach that point and you're not feeling energized, you're not feeling good, uh-oh, right? Like, how are you gonna do peak training? So you wanna make sure you're getting to each of the points in your training and see, oh, well, I still have 10 weeks to go, so we should still be feeling pretty good. Or, oh, I have 16 weeks to go, yeah, it's okay that I'm feeling like this week was relatively easy. You almost want it to feel easy those first couple of weeks.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. You know, it's really about feeling like your body's adapting to the training and like you're almost craving more. So you're looking forward to the longer runs. You feel like you're recovering well. And then as we get into like that next phase of training, I guess, as your runs start getting a little bit longer, you maybe start doing maybe longer sessions for like at marathon pace. Those are the ones that you should feel pretty excited about. And like you said, you gave the word energy. And I think that's really key, is you want to make sure that, you know, that those runs are going well, or that mentally you're at least present when you're doing them. So you're kind of looking forward to them, right? Like, you see it on the schedule and you're not like scared of it. That's not a good sign. If you are scared of, oh, am I going to be able to do this, or am I going to be able to recover from this? That's sort of a red flag. And so that's the whole purpose behind this is a slow progressive build, right? So that mentally your body, mentally and physically, you're progressing at a rate at which your body can handle and you're ready for it, right? You're ready for that next load.
Definitely. I think it's really important to think about how you want to be feeling. It's almost like how you want to be feeling each mile of the marathon, right? So at the beginning of the race, you want it to feel really easy. Halfway through the race, it might kind of start feeling hard, but it should feel like you can continue to sustain it. Then the last like 10K, think of that as peak week, you're going to feel pretty tired, but you are going to want to be able to push and dig deep at the end. But if you go out too hard at the beginning of a marathon race, mm-hmm. well, good luck, right? You might be walking to the finish line, and that's what we don't want to have happen. So I think it's a really good way to practice pacing yourself in the long right. term and practice that patience, because that's really what endurance events are about. That's really what the marathon is about, is like, how patient can you be? How consistent can you be? And how sustainable can you be with your dedication to training, like day in and day out, just doing the thing? It's definitely not an instant gratification sport. It's really something that builds way over time, and it's not something you can really like get away with just like a 5K. I feel like you could go out and rely on talent maybe a little bit, but in the marathon, it's really going to show if you did the work or not, and if you trained appropriately, or if you paced it appropriately. I feel like in a 5K, again, you could go out pretty hard and you'd still be able to probably like run to the finish, and it wouldn't, I mean, yeah, it's going to be painful, but you're only going to be in that pain for, you know, 10, 15 minutes. Whereas if you do it in the marathon, you could completely destroy yourself. It could be hours of time just walking to the finish line, which I've seen happen before. With, you know, family, friends, people I know. So I think this was a really good episode. We touched on a lot of good points. Do you have any final words, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, as you talk about peak training, how sometimes you're going to go through these periods where it's more difficult, right? And so you have to ride out those waves of negative emotions, or just like those hard workouts, or let's say you bomb one long run. You just have to bounce back and look for the silver lining and know that you're still invested in your goal of achieving, you know, whatever that is on race day. And so, and then too, just reminding yourself that the marathon training and your fitness, it's not a result of just one specific run or test run. It's more of an accumulation of your buildup and how you've been forced to endure and overcome obstacles along the way. And so just reminding yourself of that, and there's no perfect puzzle, there's no perfect marathon training build. Things can always easily be adjusted, moved around, and you know, being flexible in that way, I think, will help you a lot mentally.
Definitely. And I know training for a marathon can be a difficult event, especially when you go at it solo. And that's why working with a coach can be a really good option for training for these longer distance events, or even just any event in general. It's nice to have someone in your corner, someone rooting for you, and someone with an outsider's perspective. Also someone that has experience working with people of your ability and be able to come up with a plan specific to you to help you reach your potential in the sport of running. Oftentimes people leave a lot of their potential at the door because maybe they're not doing the right workouts, or they don't really see the potential that's inside of themselves. So if you really want to unlock that potential and see what working with an online coach is all about, we do offer a free 7-day trial with absolutely no strings attached. We would love to get started working with you and just get to know a little bit more about your goals and backgrounds. We do free consult calls with all of our trial athletes. So if that's something you are interested in, fill out the form at www.runforprs.com. Again, that's www.runforprs.com for a free 7-day coaching trial. Thanks for tuning in.